This podcast replay, it's brought to you by Edge Energy Drink. Go to myedgedrink.com and order the only energy drink I enjoy because it's delicious, smooth, and has zero aftertaste. That's my kind of energy drink. It's the Big O's choice. Make it yours. Get the Edge at myedgedrink.com.
All right, Marcel, they had the edge in the first half. What happened to the USA in the second half? Let's go. Break it down.
We're not a team that attacks. We don't have the fours. We don't have the goal scorers anymore. You know, there's no Clint Dempsey, Landon Donovan, even Josie Altidore on this team. Pulisic is more of a creator than a finisher. And you saw him set Tim Weah up for that first goal. It was an impressive run.
And that was beautiful. That was beautiful.
Great finish, but they don't have that finisher yet. They don't have that finisher. And then as for the women, man, the dream team is cycling out. You know, Alex Morgan is still there, Christine Press is still there, but you know, it's a young team as for kind
of. And by the way, they were super youngins on the dominant force when they were like the shit.
It was so long that the dominant. The domination lasted so long because, yeah, they were young. But you know, we're gonna be okay. Women, they're gonna be okay.
Men. Yeah, but the men, bro. Let me tell you something. I've been watching it a lot longer than you because I'm an old fart. That dude, that was the best half they've ever played, ever. Okay, and to this day, I still say the early '90s teams are the best USA teams we still have ever had. More complete teams we've ever had defensively, midfield. Claudio Reyna still is our best midfielder that we've ever had. We have Brian McBride who can play in the air, something we really haven't replaced, you know, overall in the box. But that half yesterday, I want you to know, Marcel, that's the greatest first half a USA team has ever played. And to go from that to then just go completely MIA in the second half, man, that pissed me off. And then that stupid penalty, God bless. You know.
Yeah, it's brutal now. It's brutal now. That was a team that we really had to beat. That was a team we really had to beat because you're considering, you know, England is going to wipe us up on Monday. That was a team you needed points against. Now you have to beat Iran. So, like, no excuse. No room, no wiggle room. You have to beat Iran. And honestly, you might have to just get points, period, against England. I'm not saying you got to beat England, but now you might have to draw. I don't know if they can afford a loss right now. That was just – it was a blown opportunity to really strengthen our bid to move out of the group stage. That was the team we really needed to beat, man. That's the team we really needed to beat there. And It was a gut punch.
Yep.
But hey, could be worse. Could be Argentina right now. So
Yeah. But the thing is with Argentina, at least you have the hope that you're gonna come back and win the next couple and get in and all that stuff and move on. You know, you know, with the USA, you have zero room for error. And yesterday you just put yourself in a corner and made life a little harder for you this time around. So yeah, it's rough, dude. Rough. All right, let's get to a little Dolphins talk. First of all, the Byron Jones thing. What's your gut telling you now that you get no update yesterday from the coach?
Like I've been saying this entire time. If you haven't heard, if we haven't reported that Byron is coming back, then add 3 weeks to the possibility of his return. So if he's not back now in week 11, 12, 13, 14 is maybe the soonest that I think he'd be activated because he's got to be activated. He's got to practice. He's got to acclimate. And then he's going to eventually have to play. It is... Again, shaping up to be a lost season. I actually haven't seen Byron Jones around the facility, and it's been kind of a while now that I actually think about it. I'm not in locker room every single day of the week. I'm not in there every hour of every day of the week. He could be getting treatment. He could be, you know, appear there anywhere when media is in locker room.
I hear he's not there every day.
But I have not seen him. I have personally not seen him in quite some time. There was a time we saw him and he'd have a sleeve on his leg, and you would think, okay, like he's got to be getting there. He's closer, but this is it's just not happening. I don't think he plays this year. And once again, the three things that I keep talking about, how to lose a job in the NFL, somebody behind you, younger, productive, and cheap. Kader Kohou is all three in spades right now. He's outplaying his expectation at outside corner opposite Xavien Howard. He's a hell of a lot cheaper than $16 million, $17 million a year. It is at a very realistic point that Byron Jones is cut this offseason.
Oh, yeah. No, realistic. That's done.
No matter when, whether it's before June 1st or after, you're going to have to eat, if you're Miami, you're going to have to eat about $11 million or so in dead cap, matter what. It's not going anywhere. You cut them before June 1st, you eat all of that dead cap in 2023, and then you wipe your hands with it after June 1st if he's moved. You do about half of it in 23, the other half in 2024, but it saves you $11 million in 2023. So it's something, especially for a team that is above the salary cap right now and is going to have to shed salary right now, he is the most obvious candidate, to do so. And it's not even, it's not even that he was a bad player when he's healthy. It's that, what they say the best ability is?
Availability.
You're not available. You're very expensive. And we just found somebody cheaper, younger, who's as productive, if not more, maybe even has a higher ceiling here. I don't personally see it. And it's, again, it's nothing against Byron. I'm not doing that from a place of emotion or anger at him or disrespect. It's from a business standpoint. It just doesn't make sense to keep a $16 million hit on the record as you're inching closer to having to pay Tua. And you got all these other big contracts coming on the books. You got Tyree, you got Teron, and you're going to have to pay Christian. So it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up right now. I would be at this point surprised if he's on the roster by training camp 2023, or maybe even, at least regular season. Who knows what happens in training camp, but I would be surprised to see him.
By the way, Edge Energy Drink is the finest energy drink on the planet. I promise you can't get it in a store. You got to go to myedgedrink.com, get it delivered to your home, get it delivered to your office. Use our code Big O, get 10% off. It is delicious, smooth, and has zero aftertaste and only 78 calories, man. Try it. It's a great elixir. Mix it with the vodka and you are going to love it. I mix it with my Grey Goose and it is out of this world. The finest energy drink on the planet. Delicious, smooth, and zero aftertaste. MyEdgeDrink.com. All right, this week, anything on Austin Jackson? What do we know about Austin Jackson?
Saw him in the locker room yesterday. Mm-hmm. I think they're at a point right now where it is hard to fix what ain't broke. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
This offensive line, Tua might as well have worn the same jersey for the past 3 weeks, just with a little bit of Febreze sprayed on it, because the thing ain't dirty. It's not no stains, no grass, no turf pellets on it.
Right.
Because he hasn't been touched.
Right.
It's been a beautiful offensive line, or performance from the offensive line. So I'm not sure that they just I'll admit, a few weeks ago, I thought, yeah, slide him in at left guard. Might as well. Eichenberg's out for a while. I think they're at a point where, look, this is working. This is working. Low threshold to put Jackson in the game. I think if they start to struggle, then insert him back in. Obviously, there's an injury at guard or tackle. He's an easy easy replacement, but it is hard to argue against playing Brandon Schell and Robert Jones there at right tackle and left guard. I think that this line has been solidified. Ironically, we knew that. We knew that coming in, right? Because the first 6-7 weeks of the season, when you looked at pass block win rate, when you looked at pressures allowed, Armstead, one of the best in the league. Carter Williams, one of the best in the league. Rob Hunt, one of the best in the league. Liam Eikenberg, Greg Little, bottom 10 in either category. Both those guys got replaced, and oh my God, the line got better. So that we knew that this was possible. We knew what happens when you replace the weak links in the line. So it shouldn't be that big of a surprise, but it is, again, it is hard to fix what is not broken. And right now, the offensive line ain't broke. It's not broke. Although, look, man, if you did want to just keep Austin in game shape and keep him, you know, loose and ready to go, put him in against Houston at some point when you're up by 64 in the second quarter.
Well, I'll give you something that now that you have Jackson healthy – that I think you could see, you know, down the line, you could see a lineup in short yardage situations where they're going to bring Austin Jackson in as a sixth lineman. That, I think, is something now that gets on the table. I don't think Austin will be starting because exactly of what you said, they've been playing so well now, it'd be absolutely asinine to make a change right now, especially this last – I understand that Cleveland sucks – but, brother, that line played fantastic, and they blocked the crap out of them. And I think – and this week is another great week to work on that running game. That's one of the things I like about the Cleveland-Houston stretch here in 3 weeks is that now your line is turning the corner. Now you're getting to work on that running game with Wilson now being added. And those games coming up now, the San Fran, the Buffalo, all these kind of games – you're going to need a running game going into December and possibly January. So I think this is an absolutely perfect time to work on that running game. You can't make any changes. But if there's a change or an addition that I would add to their formation is short yardage, goal line, I would not be surprised if they want to bring in a real power lineup and they bring in Jackson now to be like the sixth lineman in a short yardage situation to try to get an advantage.
Let's say, and let's not disrespect Cleveland too much. Let's not write them off too much because there's Myles Garrett and Jadeveon Clowney were still very much active for that game.
No, I get it.
So that is a good performance against what should be a very good Cleveland pass rush. I literally had to ask Daniel Oyafusi after the game. Said Myles Garrett played, right? Like Myles Garrett was active, right? Like I didn't miss anything. I wasn't late or, you know, I wasn't on the phone or, you know, in the bathroom when they announced he was out. He played. He just wasn't visible. And so like it was a great performance. This is another time this Sunday, it's another opportunity to get the run game loose. Houston's the worst run defense in the league. They're the worst team in the league, but specifically they're the worst run defense in the NFL. Cleveland, I think, was 30th entering that game as well.
That's what I'm saying.
That's why they've given up crazy yardage to Miami and then Buffalo in back-to-back weeks. Neither team specifically runs the ball particularly well statistically. It's an opportunity because when you look at this final stretch after the Houston game, it's the one we've been talking about since April. Oh, since April, we've been talking about what this stretch is going to mean. This is the one. This turns the boys into men. This turns, I don't know what a baby dolphin is called, but it turns the baby to an adult dolphin right now. When you got to go to San Francisco, to LA, to Buffalo, and back to back to back weeks. Man, then you gotta face Green Bay at home, which, look, as long as 12 is playing, I can't write Green Bay off. I don't care how bad they've looked. You got to go to New England, who they're not a world beater, but at New England, at Gillette, that's going to be a tough game.
By the way, you can't write the Dolphins off as long as Uno's playing too. Okay, just
at this point, no. You can't. It's gonna be a good game.
Just want to make sure. Just want to make sure.
And then you got the Jets at home to end the season. That might get flexed, man. That's Sunday Night Football.
Yeah. But the only thing I know Rodgers is Rodgers, but I don't fear that team. That's my problem with that. I could fear Rodgers if he had the help, but I don't think he has the help in order to win. And that's the only reason why I don't fear. That's a bad football team right now, the Green Bay Packers. They're a bad football team. Rodgers is a badass, and maybe he's not a good leader. Because it looks to me like he's lighting that place on fire as he's walking outside the house. I mean, he's an arsonist if I've ever seen one right now. Okay, I gotta be honest. That's what I'm seeing.
There's a few teams in this NFL, and we saw one on Sunday night. We saw one on Sunday night where I just don't care how decimated they are, as long as their quarterback is playing. They've got a shot to win. Mahomes is the king, the crowning jewel of that argument. He had nobody at wide receiver. Yeah, Travis Kelce, but nobody at wide receiver. Two running backs hurt and didn't skip a beat. Then you would never have been able to tell. You would have thought, okay, that's been their starting lineup this whole season. So, like, I can never count the Chiefs out. And yes, I can't, like, you can't count the Dolphins out if Tua is playing, because they haven't lost when Tua plays and finishes.
Yeah, and they got and they got Andy Reid, bro. Andy Reid counts for. Like, I mean, Matt LeFleur. I understand the Matt LeFleur. It's a fun name to say and all that stuff, but Matt LeFleur has not earned the respect that Andy Reid has. He got Alex Smith to play with balls, and that's pretty. That's pretty hard to do, because his BBs never dropped until he got to Kansas City. Okay.
And the Dolphins have Mike McDaniel, who, man, I have friends around the league who text me or you know, I talk to on the phone, I game with, that are saying, like, hey, man, he is a genius. I think he's already the best play caller in the league. People I respect telling me they think that McDaniel is the best play caller.
Oh no, I can understand that right now, how he's doing the things that he's doing, that people have that kind of respect for him. Yeah, that's the difference between what's gone on with LeFleur and McDaniel. With LeFleur, you've got a Hall of Fame quarterback, so you're not going to get the same kind of love, even if you were good. But when you're developing a young quarterback and developing an offense that's never done anything like this, and all of a sudden you do it, McDaniel has to get all the credit, because it was never here before he got here. So that's the bottom line.
This year, the Dolphins hadn't had a top 10 offense since 1995.
I know. I was there.
The longest streak in the NFL.
I know.
Drought in the NFL. So, yeah, like, it's funny. I talk about this a lot. The sports world, we're like so obsessed with attributing all the credit and all the blame on one entity. You know what I mean? Like, oh, it's Tyreek. It's Tua. It's Mike McDaniel. That's the reason why they're good. No, it's all three.
Well, and Chris Greer.
It's Chris Greer. Like, you can't just like point at one entity and say like you're 100% responsible for what's happening on the field. Like, it really is. It's football, dude. Like, it's a team. It's a total team effort. This isn't high school, where if you have the best athlete, you put him at quarterback and he'll probably win you a bunch of games. You're not throwing Derrick Henry in against, you know, future accountants. Like, this is the NFL. So it has truly been a team effort. It was they just haven't. They haven't made a lot of mistakes. You know, every step of the way after the Brian Flores firing, they haven't made a lot of mistakes in moving forward. They nailed the coaching, the head coach. They nailed the staff. You know, were there? Don't write off the decision to retain Josh Boyer yet, because, you know, the defense had to undergo a philosophical change.
He's done a marvelous job, bro.
And I think marvelous. That it's going to. I think you're going to see him pick up. I think you're going to see it pick up. He was looking with, you know, working with the skeleton crew a little bit there on defense.
No, not only that, dude, he's also had to change the philosophy. He lost his corner, and then his number one is injured. So he's got to play zone now more than he ever has.
Secondary is always the strength, right? The secondary, makes it so you don't need elite pass rushers. You just need guys that can create a little bit of pressure, a little bit of havoc. And you got ball hawks when a quarterback has to make a tight window throw that he wasn't ready for, a decision that he wasn't ready for. It kind of flips it all on its head now. Like, you still obviously you have Holland, you have Kader Cole, who's been excellent so far. But now the strength in this team is in that front seven. And now you do things, you know, you overload. You do an excess. Like, I've been asking them for a couple of weeks about the practice of putting Phillips, Chubb, and Ingram on the field at the same time. And I asked Chubb, you know, what do you see from an offense when all three of you are on the field? He said, chaos. You said chaos. O-line, oh, hey, here, right here. This guy, you coming this way. God, like, all of a sudden, you're creating a little bit of panic. And as McDaniel told me yesterday, if you make an offense hesitate even a little bit, you make a team hesitate even a little bit, as long as you know what you're doing and you know your assignment and you hit your marks, that's all the advantage that you need at this level. And he said something else that I really love. He said defenses are usually reactionary. You know, they react to what an offense is doing. When they put those three guys on the field at the same time, they're setting the tone. They want the offense to react to them. That's what I loved on both sides of the ball from the Dolphins this season. We talked about it after last game, but what Tua's been able to do. He's not reacting to a defense. Defense is reacting to him.
Yeah,
he's not playing against a defense. The defense is playing against him. And that's the kind of attitude we've seen from the Dolphins on either side of the ball this season. I think that's been one of maybe the biggest philosophical, mental changes, foundational changes from last year to this year, is they are setting the damn tone.
Jason Sanders, I thought it was really cool that he did not dance around the issues, and he took responsibility when he just, let me get the exact quote, just not getting the job done, really. And so at least there wasn't any pointing fingers or isn't any excuse making or anything like that. I thought that's a good thing. I know you guys asked him about the confidence, and he says, no, I'm still confident. And, you know, if you lose that, you're definitely, you know, done. So you just wonder about that now that he's aware of that. But has it really affected his confidence is the question. Your thoughts on the Jason Sanders situation, and are you surprised that after the bye week there isn't anyone else on the roster?
Maybe a little bit, but I understand it's kind of a delicate situation, you know. Like, on one side, this is the NFL. It's a business. It's about winning, and if you are hurting your team's chances at winning, most teams aren't going to think twice about your feelings and your confidence. They're going to get somebody in there who can. But also, at this point, like, the kicker, it's such a mental position, mentally heavy position, that you don't want to, I guess maybe you don't want to risk igniting a powder keg situation by bringing in somebody else and letting them know, hey, you're on thin ice. I think that's not really McDaniel's style. I think he's more of a supportive kind of guy, that he's going to move on if that's his last resort. You know what I mean? Like, he will move on if he absolutely has to. And we'll see. Like, if he costs, the thing about Sanders' kicks, they haven't themselves, you know, by themselves, cost the Dolphins a win. You could say, you know, if he hits that kick against the Jets, things would be probably different. But it's not like, you know, they lost by two and he missed a field goal. You know what I'm saying? It's not like they lost by one and he missed missed an extra point or something like that. They haven't themselves been the reason why the team loses. If that changes, if that happens, Michael, I'm Marcel, not Cam. If that happens, then I think you do have to move on, because it's too tight of a window here. It's too tight of a race in the AFC. They're in the damn hunt for the number one seed right now.
Yeah.
And every game counts. And if your kicker isn't getting it done in the regular season, and he's costing you wins in the regular season, there's little reason to trust that he won't do the same when the games literally count, when it's literally win or go home come January.
By the way, party at my house in Arizona, Super Bowl week. All right, Zach Wilson. What do you think about that mess? What do you think about that mess?
Thank God. You know, I hosted game night on ESPN Radio on Sunday night. And I could have spent an entire hour talking about Zach Wilson. Stephen A. said it best on First Take. Right now, Zach Wilson is trash. He's a boy playing a man's game. He's not making reads. He's not setting his feet. He's playing lazy. He's not taking accountability for his actions after the game.
Who told him, by the way? Who told Stephen A. to say it? Because he knows nothing about football. But go ahead.
Don't get pissy with the media when they're giving you an opportunity. All right, look. You've heard other quarterbacks, you know, play poorly in a team's loss and say, yeah, that was on me. I played badly. Like I let the team down. We're not going to win when I play like shit. Zach Wilson, your defense let up 3 points. You guys were only able to score 3. Do you feel like maybe you let the defense down a little bit? And I get it. It's kind of a leading question. But to just – no.
No. He didn't. He scored. He got like – I think he got an old lady's number on the – on the sidelines there. You know, he scored. I mean, you know, Zach is scoring off the field. He doesn't need to score on the field. I think he...
Yeah. 4-for-11 for 12 yards.
It's productive.
2.7 in the second half.
2.77 inches per play, buddy. Make sure you get that shit right there. Hey, 2.77 inches. I'd like to see that little wuss go through the 2 years that Tua had to endure with that scum named Flo. Okay? I'd love to see him have to tolerate those 2 years.
The crazy thing is, Zach Wilson has a better team around him right now than Tua did the past 2 years.
Most people do.
He has a better team around him. Most people do. That is a better constructed team around him than Tua had last year or his rookie year.
Hey, brother, I got the Herbert bitches yesterday. Well, no, did you see Herbert's got injuries? I'm like, dude, he still has Eckler. Better than anything Tua had the first 2 years. He still had Keenan Allen on the field the other night, who had 95 yards, and he's a Pro Bowl type of wide receiver. And the Palmer kid had over 100 yards. He doesn't look like he's a bad receiver. He looks like he's a pretty good, you know, pick for them. So he does have some talent out there. Don't tell me that he doesn't have any talent. Yeah, he's had the better running back than Tua has had for 3 straight years. Because Austin Eckler, I did not realize this. Did you see that stat on Sunday night? That Austin Eckler over the last 3 years has more touchdowns than any other running back? I was like, what?
God. He's so good in fantasy that people maybe write him off in real life. Austin Eckler is one of the most effective running backs in the NFL right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but did you know that stat on Sunday night when they put it out? Did you really know that he had the most touchdowns since 2019, I believe it was? I saw his stat. I was like, that's stupid.
I think if you gave me 3 guesses, I'd probably get it. If you gave me 3 guesses, I would probably get it. I would guess Derrick Henry up there. And, yeah, I think Eckler would probably be my second guess if it wasn't Henry.
The kid from Philly was pretty good the last few years.
No, Miles Sanders didn't score. He didn't score any touchdowns in 2020.
Oh, he had injuries, right?
No, it just didn't score. It was like a whole running joke because he made some comment about his fantasy performance or something like that.
So, I'm trying to think of the running backs at Christian, but he's always injured too.
Yeah, McCaffrey's always been hurt. Kamara.
Oh, Chubb.
Maybe Kamara.
Chubb. I would have put Chubb there. So like, Henry, Chubb. I just wouldn't have put Eckler there. Maybe I'm thinking my 3 guesses. I'm trying to think of guys that I would have certainly put. Henry and Chubb for sure would have put as I'm thinking about it. Kamara's had some injuries, right? So the last couple years.
I think I would have guessed Austin Eckler, man. Like I said, in those top three I don't want to act like LeBron here, like saying, you know, like, oh, I knew it the whole time. I knew everything. I'm not trying to count, but like,
realistically, yeah, no, the Giants kid has also been injured. You know, you're actually, now that I think about it, you're right. You might have to come to Eckler when you think about the last, but again, it's a great stat. I had no idea. It blew me away.
My thing with Justin Herbert here is like, yeah, he is more physically talented than Tua. And like, guys, hear me out here, because you know my stance on this. He is more physically talented than Tua.
Lots of people.
There's a lot of people that are more physically talented than Tua.
Lots of people are more physically talented than Joe Montana. Big deal.
Physical talent does not equate to playing the position better. And right now, Tua is playing the position better than Justin Herbert is. I don't think it's particularly debatable. Like, I think that's where the hang up is. Like, both things can be true. Justin Herbert can have a bigger arm. He can be more athletic. He can be more physically talented.
He is.
Jamarcus Russell was more physically talented than Tua Tagovailoa. That doesn't mean he's a better quarterback.
Ryan Leaf was more gifted. Vince Young was more gifted. I can come up with a crap ton of quarterbacks that were more gifted. Doesn't mean that they're real quarter. See, the Zach Wilson one I always love. Well, his workout and how he threw them. And it's like,
it's stupid.
Like the stupidest thing in the world. So really, we're going to go off of somebody's workout competing against air? Like, I mean, you know.
He threw throwing against his body, against, you know, again, no defense to a receiver down the field. Yeah, that makes him the number two pick in the. No, I thought it was ridiculous. I thought Fields should have been the number two pick. Although I don't know how.
Well, look at his body of work. Why would Justin Fields fall in the draft? Only because, you know. But whatever. Bottom line is no, because you can't go off resume. If you go off resume, he's supposed to go number two. Like the Clemson game didn't impress you. Like the kid takes a kidney shot and then comes back and throws a touchdown right on your head. That's like watching Miguel Cabrera, you know, Roger Clemens throws at his head and Miguel goes, "Oh, really? Okay, next one, buddy." And he deposits it in right field, opposite shot. That's the equivalent of what Justin Fields did in that Clemson game. Taking that kidney shot and then boom, right there, touchdown on the next play.
My thing about Justin Fields was that even if he was slow to develop as a passer,
he had
an elite trait, an elite skill to fall back on.
Right,
he would still be able to run the football in like without help and talent around him. He could still generate offense by himself.
Well, here's my thing I like about Justin Fields. I'll top what you just said. To piggyback on top of what you said. The other thing I like about Justin Fields is character. So I know, unlike Jamarcus Russell, unlike Ryan Leaf, unlike, I don't know, a slew of other quarterbacks, I know that he's going to work to fix himself and become a passer. He's going to try, at least. You know what I mean? I know Johnny Manziel's not, bro. He's going to worry about going to party, and he's going to worry about, you know, going and out and hanging out or whatever and BS. You know, there's certain guys that got crap in their heads, like a lot of us at that age. And it's very few are mature. Justin is one of those guys that I know he's not a polished passer. I get that. But the skill set is there. So all you got to do, does he have the work ethic? Great. Now I've got a shot. If he doesn't have the work ethic, then we're done. We're screwed. You're never going to get there. But that's what I love about Justin Fields, that he has the character, the determination, the fight, all of that. Now, I will say this. He still has to work on beating people from the pocket, because you saw the shoulder injury this week. You're not going to win this way. Your career will not end up the right way if you're a running quarterback first. So that's the one thing that he has to work on still. But he has the work ethic. So I trust him to try to become that guy.
Yeah, he's got the arm talent. He's got the arm talent.
Oh, God.
The processing is where I feel like he needs to improve the most. But, again, he has an elite skill to fall back on. Zach Wilson has none of that. He doesn't have the processing. He's got arm strength, but who cares? If you're in the NFL, you can throw the damn ball. So I'm not that impressed by it. Like, the decision – as I said it on Twitter right after it happened, surrender football has consequences. Third and one, as they're trying to drive and get in the field goal position, third and run, 25 seconds, 30 seconds left. He throws short of the sticks, and not just short of the sticks, behind the line of scrimmage, and they're forced to punt.
Right.
Surrender damn football. Cowardly football.
Yeah.
You're telling me nothing was open downfield. There's no chance, no shot you could have taken. You couldn't run it yourself. You're going to throw it behind the line of scrimmage. That's got to be frustrating. So frustrating for the coaching staff. As Dan Orlovsky put it, does Zach Wilson know the offense? Are we 100% sure that he knows the offense that he's been playing in for 2 years? Because I don't think he does. I don't think he does. I don't think he has it. I don't think he starts next week. I think by the time week 18 comes around, the Dolphins are playing Joe Flacco.
Well, you got to have an assassin's skill set and mind in the NFL to play quarterback, because your windows are going to be small and tight. And you're going to have to anticipate them, and you're going to have to hit them. And if you're not aggressive and you're not willing to attack them, and you're waiting for the sliding glass window to come, this is the NFL, bro. Once in a while, that's going to happen, and you're going to have the easy throws. But a lot of them are going to be hard, and you're going to have to anticipate them, and you're going to have some guts. And that kid, I don't know if he even has the work ethic to be that. You know what I'm saying? When you look at our guy, you can tell that he's a complete assassin when it comes to that. And when it comes to reading the defenses, that's the other thing that guy excels at. And when I look at Zach, I look at a party kid, bro. Is what I look at. I look at Johnny Manziel with a little bit more athletic ability. That's what I see. I see a taller version of Johnny Manziel.
Just, you know, a spoiled kid is
right. Right.
Spoiled, pampered kid.
Right. That's it. And what was Johnny Manziel? Same thing, dude. Got by with athletic, and you can get by with athletic ability in high school and college. In the NFL, you're not going to get by with athletic ability. You got to have the mindset. Marcel, what are you working on this week so folks can check you out, my friend?
Yeah, a little bit more on that the Bradley Chubb, Jalen Phillips, Melvin Ingram piece, you know, working on relationship between Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill, and also story on Alec Ingold, who was presented a national award in Washington, D.C. last week for his work with the U.S. Adoption Agency. Man, good stuff here. Working on all that. Parting stance. A lot of people have taken to Twitter to pull receipts on analysts who they thought were wrong about Tua. And while, you know, I'm not against I told you so-ing, mm-hmm. There's an extent, to an extent. Don't harass people. Don't be assholes. I'm tired of getting, you know, I'm tired of seeing, you know, things go what I think is overboard at people.
Right.
You know, specifically with Mina Kimes, I know that there's a lot of, you know, she liked Justin Herbert. She thought Herbert is better than Tua. A lot of people did, man.
Yeah.
A lot of people did. To be fair, nothing in the last 2 years. And, oh, you're going to argue with me. We got to save the actual argument for some other time. Nothing in the past 2 years suggested that Herbert wasn't the better quarterback. Like, Tua physical. Has changed the narrative
physical.
This year.
Physicals. That's all. It really, in the end, dude, it's just I – The problem I have with the whole Tua situation, and what still gets me riled up, were the absolutes. You and Cam were never the absolutes, but many others were. No, he can't play. No, he can't do it. No, he's not tall enough. No, he's not doesn't have good strong enough arm. And those were the people. Not the, you know, I don't have a problem with somebody saying, yeah, you know, I got to see it. You know, he's got to develop into this. I got to see him stay healthy. You know, the wait and see people, that should be for every player. But I think the problem with the Tua situation was that there were so many absolutes, and too many people came out and ended his story before it was ever written. And those were the things that set me. Those were the things that set me off personally.
I don't disagree, but I talked to Mina a lot. I talked to Mina a lot,
and she was an absolute.
She wasn't an absolutist. That's the thing. Like, I'm not going to go through our text and read them off. But like the story that I wrote about him last year, she very much said, hey, look, you get another year. Like everybody knows that offensive line was horrible, but you can see with some quarterbacks that even when their line is bad, that they just don't have it. Look at Davis Mills. Look at Zach Wilson. Like you can see it. She said, that's not Tua. Like, in fact, it's impressive that he's shown improvement despite his line getting worse from year one to year two. She even said, improve the situation around him in 2023 and then make a decision. That was always her stance. I think that
maybe I got her mixed up. Maybe I got her mixed up with Russini, but I'm pretty sure one of those two were absolutes. I don't have time to go back and look at their audio, but man, I swear I could remember on NFL Live, absolute, like, yeah, no, he's not the guy. And to me, those are the people that I like to go after myself. You know, because my problem is, and I've gone through this before over the years, you get in love with somebody's physical talents and that doesn't mean shit to me. And I keep telling, we went through this with Tannehill, and I keep telling people, it doesn't matter, bro. Look at his brain. When things go awry, it scatters. And it just, he's not that guy. And there's lots of quarterbacks like that, that when all hell breaks loose, they don't have the composure to stay there with it. And I, you know, that to me is better than, that's the better trait than any other physical trait that's out there. You got to have that composure in mind.
I think, and the last thing I'll say is it's the, like the almost interceptions, the near interceptions thing. Oh. I think that came about because Emmanuel Acho started his Tua over Herbert argument right after the Steelers game. And yes, he did say something along the lines of, hey, I just watched him almost throw four interceptions.
Which is stupid. Everybody does that. Everybody.
The thing that tripped me out, the thing that like I think people got to look in the mirror and ask themselves why they go so hard at that. I mentioned the near interceptions on two separate occasions in my writing, in my work. I've received 0%.
Because you've never been an absolute, dude.
Like it's
you were never an absolute. If you were an absolute, I would bust your balls like I bust Poupart's, like I bust Joe Shad's balls, like I bust Omar's balls, because they went to those areas.
Two things are true with that Steelers game, though. One, this wasn't like they weren't near interceptions, as in like that was a bad pass. Oh, that was he sailed that one. It was like legitimately four of them were drops. It wasn't like a 50-50 maybe.
It means nothing, Marcel.
But two, let me finish. But two, that was his first real game action in like 3 weeks. That was his first real live action in 3 weeks. The timing was off, and that was the reason for it. Wasn't necessarily bad decision as it was. These were bad. The chemistry's got to be rebuilt, and that is what I ultimately wrote. But either way, guys, like.
But you were never an absolute, ever.
I'm not an absolute, but what I am saying again, I got to go because I know my mom's got to go to the airport.
Go ahead.
Just enjoy the ride at this point.
Hell like, yeah.
Don't be that bus full of fans destroying a town on your way to Arizona. Like, get your "I told you so" off, and then keep it pushing and focus on what your quarterback and what your team has been able to accomplish and been able to do.
So let me ask you something. The people that are going after it, they had to hear all the negative shit about Tua for 2 years now. So for 2 months now, they're having fun, and you want them to calm down? It's not a fair thing, bro. It's not. You can't pound the shit out of somebody for 2 years, I'm only gonna pound you for a couple months. No, it's not gonna happen that way.
The best feeling in the world is it's not getting to say "I told you so." It's knowing that people were wrong.
Yeah,
I mean, people who told me that I had an ex girlfriend tell me that I would never make it out of Greenville, South Carolina.
Look at that.
I don't go find her and like say, "Hey, I thought you were wrong about this." I just know that anytime you're in an office and they're playing ESPN, you have seen me on television.
That's it.
You know that you're wrong. I don't need to remind you. They know that they're wrong. You ain't got to tell them. You don't got to tell them. You can just smile, kick back, and watch what you've known was true all along.
Dude, Disagree. Disagree. Send her a text that says,
if you're going to clap at anybody, Mike Florio this offseason said the only way you fix Tua is that's the most disrespectful thing I've ever seen anybody say about Tua. And that deserves.
Oh no, he's a complete ass clown that needs to be pounded.
That deserves the energy.
No, no, 20 years. Go after Florio for 20 years for this, the way he acted with Tua. By the way, send that ex girlfriend a text that says dot, and that's it. That's all you got to do, bro. That's all you got to do.
My TikTok account a couple weeks ago told me that she viewed my profile. She viewed my page. So she knows what the deal is. I ain't got to tell her. I don't got to rub that in. I just got to keep living my life and enjoying what I always knew was going to be true.
Give me her name. I'll send her a text. Breaking news, Marcel's with ESPN. Ha.
I will not. But all right, man, I got to dip. Mom's got a flight to catch. But
safe travels to mom. And she's one hell of a mother raising you, bro. Great job.
I'll let her know.
Great job, mom. Safe travels.
All right, y'all. See you Sunday.
You got it, baby. Be good. There you go. The great Marcel Louis-Jacques. And you want the great energy drink? You go to myedgedrink.com. Order it. Save 10% by using our code BIGO. Now you have the edge.